Yui, Wellington. Standard 10,082 to 10,191. Medical doctor of the Souk School. Graduated standard 10,112. Married. Juana Marcus, Bene Gesserit. Standard 10,092 to 10,186. Question. Chiefly noted as betrayer of Duke Leto Atreides. Compare to Bibliography, Appendix 7, Imperial Conditioning, and Betrayal, the. From Dictionary of Muad'Dib by the Princess Irulan. Although he heard Dr. Yui enter the training room, noting the stiff deliberation of the man's pace, Paul remained stretched out, face down on the exercise table where the masseuse had left him. He felt deliciously relaxed after the workout with Gurney Halleck. "You do look comfortable," said Yui in his calm, high-pitched voice. Paul raised his head, saw the man's stick figure standing several paces away, took in at a glance the wrinkled black clothing, the square block of a head with purple lips and drooping mustache, the diamond tattoo of imperial conditioning on his forehead, the long black hair caught in the Souk School's silver ring at the left shoulder. "You'll be happy to hear we haven't time for regular lessons today," Yui said. "Your father will be along presently." Paul sat up. "However, I've arranged for you to have a film book viewer and several lessons during the crossing to Arrakis." "Oh." Paul began pulling on his clothes. He felt excitement that his father would be coming. They had spent so little time together since the Emperor's command to take over the fief of Arrakis. Yui crossed to the L table, thinking, "How the boy has filled out these past few months. Such a waste. Oh, such a sad waste." And he reminded himself, "I must not falter. What I do is done to be certain my Juana no longer can be hurt by the Harkonnen beasts." Paul joined him at the table, buttoning his jacket. "What'll I be studying on the way across?" "Ah, the tyrannic life forms of Arrakis. The planet seems to have opened its arms to certain tyrannic life forms. It's not clear how. I must seek out the planetary ecologist when we arrive, a Dr. Kynes, and offer my help in the investigation." And Yui thought, "What am I saying? I play the hypocrite even with myself." "Will there be something on the Fremen?" Paul asked. "The Fremen?" Yui drummed his fingers on the table, caught Paul staring at the nervous motion, withdrew his hand. "Maybe you have something on the whole Arrakeen population," Paul said. "Yes, to be sure," Yui said. "There are two general separations of the people. Fremen, they are one group, and the others are the people of the Graben, the Sink, and the Pan. There's some intermarriage, I'm told. The women of Pan and Sink villages prefer Fremen husbands. Their men prefer Fremen wives. They have a saying, 'Polish comes from the cities, wisdom from the desert.' Do you have pictures of them?" "I'll see what I can get you. The most interesting feature, of course, is their eyes. Totally blue. No whites in them."
"Mutation?"
"No. It's linked to saturation of the blood with melange."
"The Fremen must be brave to live at the edge of that desert."
"By all accounts," Yui said, "they compose poems to their knives. Their women are as fierce as the men. Even Fremen children are violent and dangerous. You'll not be permitted to mingle with them, I dare say."
Paul stared at Yui, finding in these few glimpses of the Fremen a power of words that caught his entire attention. What a people to win as allies.
"And the worms?" Paul asked.
What? I'd like to study more about the sandworms.
Ah, to be sure. I've a film book on a small specimen, only 110 meters long and 22 meters in diameter. It was taken in the northern latitudes. Worms of more than 400 meters in length have been recorded by reliable witnesses, and there's reason to believe even larger ones exist.
Paul glanced down at a conical projection chart of the northern Arakeen latitudes spread on the table. The desert belt and south polar regions are marked uninhabitable. Is it the worms?
And the storms.
But any place can be made habitable.
If it's economically feasible, Huey said. Arrakis has many costly perils.
He smoothed his drooping mustache.
Your father will be here soon. Before I go, I've a gift for you. Something I came across in packing.
He put an object on the table between them. Black, oblong, no larger than the end of Paul's thumb. Paul looked at it. Ewing noted how the boy did not reach for it and thought, how cautious he is. It's a very old orange Catholic Bible made for space travelers. Not a film book, but actually printed on filament paper. It has its own magnifier and electrostatic charge system.
He picked it up, demonstrated. The book is held closed by the charge, which forces against spring-locked covers. You press the edge, thus, and the pages you've selected repel each other, and the book opens.
It's so small.
But it has 1,800 pages. You press the edge, thus, and so, and the charge moves ahead one page at a time as you read. Never touch the actual pages with your fingers. The filament tissue is too delicate.
He closed the book, handed it to Paul.
Try it.
Huey watched Paul work the page adjustment, thought,
I salve my own conscience. I give him the surcease of religion before betraying him. Thus may I say to myself that he has gone where I cannot go.
This must have been made before film books, Paul said.
It's quite old. Let it be our secret, huh? Your parents might think it too valuable for one so young.
And Huey thought, his mother would surely wonder at my motives. Well, Paul closed the book, held it in his hand. If it's so valuable.
Indulge an old man's whim, Huey said. It was given to me when I was very young.
And he thought, I must catch his mind as well as his cupidity.
Open it to 467 Kalima, where it says, From water does all life begin. There's a slight notch on the edge of the cover to mark the place.
Paul felt the cover, detected two notches, one shallower than the other. He pressed the shallower one and the book spread open on his palm, its magnifier sliding into place.
Read it aloud, Huey said.
Paul wet his lips with his tongue, read, Think you of the fact that a deaf person cannot hear? Then what deafness may we not all possess? What senses do we lack that we cannot see and cannot hear another world all around us? What is there around us that we cannot...
Stop it, Huey barked.
Paul broke off, stared at him. Huey closed his eyes, fought to regain composure.
What perversity caused the book to open at Maiwana's favorite passage?
He opened his eyes, saw Paul staring at him. Is something wrong? Paul asked.
I'm sorry, Huey said. That was my dead wife's favorite passage. It's not the one I intended you to read. It brings up memories that are painful.
There are two notches, Paul said.
Of course, Yui thought. Wana marked her passage. His fingers are more sensitive than mine and found her mark. It was an accident. No more.
You may find the book interesting, Yui said. It has much historical truth in it, as well as good ethical philosophy.
Paul looked down at the tiny book in his palm. Such a small thing. Yet it contained a mystery. Something had happened while he read from it. He had felt something stir his terrible purpose.
Your father will be here any minute, Yui said. Put the book away, and read it at your leisure.
Paul touched the edge of it as Yui had shown him. The book sealed itself. He slipped it into his tunic. For a moment there, when Yui had barked at him, Paul had feared the man would demand the book's return.
I thank you for the gift, Dr. Yui, Paul said, speaking formally. It will be our secret. If there is a gift of favor you wish from me, please do not hesitate to ask.
I need for nothing, Yui said. And he thought, why do I stand here, torturing myself, and torturing this poor lad, though he does not know it? Oy, damn those Harkonnen beasts! Why did they choose me for their abomination?